Live from the greatest city, the greatest state, the greatest country, on the second greatest planet in the solar system, it's episode number 548 of the award-winning Midday with Trey and BK. On today's show, at 11:45, we're discussing the movie The Sandlot with Patrick Renna, the actor who played Ham in the film. You're killing me, Smalls. At 11:30, where are we at in society? A teacher goes hipster by stating her opinion on her t-shirt about Christopher Columbus on Columbus Day to her fifth grade class. And in mere minutes, we are previewing Game 4 between the Astros and Yankees. Plus, are people giving Todd Orlando too much of a pass in the name of injuries? I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today, it's the Horns fantasy sports expert and one-time gigolo, Adam Wagner. What's up, Wags?
What's up, guys?
And the one Jew in a sea of Gentiles here at the Horn, living a trucker lifestyle that includes the fastest cattle prod this side of Dirty Sixth. He is Brad Kellner.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
As long as they have the Fight Club in the senior citizen home.
No yelling on the bus!
Yesterday's Fight Club story, nursing home Fight Club story, was confined within the walls of the senior citizen home. However, unfortunately, some people ratted on the employees that were trying to keep the Fight Club going.
First rule of old folk Fight Club: don't talk about old folk Fight Club. Simple as that. What happens in the OFCC or the OFFC stays within the walls of the OFFC. Trey, the Houston Astros are probably going to the World Series.
Yeah. That's not a limb that you're going out on there, or it's a pretty sturdy one.
History would tell you that the Astros have a very good shot. Matter of fact, a 75% chance to go to the Fall Classic, regardless of what happens today.
75% being a 2-1 lead for the team that has home field advantage in the series?
Yes. 75% of the time. Hey, you stole my stat, jerk.
I was guessing.
No, you weren't guessing.
Sure I was.
Really?
Educated guess.
Well, that's the exact stat. Good job right there, sir. Yes, teams who lead a best-of-seven CS series 2-1 and who opened up the series at home, a.k.a. home field advantage like you talked about, have gone on to win the series 75% of the time. Now, the Astros can really take control of this series with a win today in Game 5. 86% of teams that are up 3-1 in a best-of-seven Major League Baseball postseason series and who have home field advantage have gone on to win the series. So Game 5s are always massive, but if the Astros can take this one, Game 4 is always massive. If the Astros can take this one, then they are in very, very good position to win the American League pennant.
How are you feeling about tonight's game for the Astros? We have Zach Greinke on the mound for Houston. He just flat out has not been good this postseason for this baseball team, going up against the Yankees ace, a guy who started the series for the Yankees game one, ends up winning that ball game two with Masahiro Tanaka.
Yeah, I think too many national pundits are chalking this one up as a Yankees victory today. I think Astros fans and folks around here are pretty confident in Zach Greinke. But I think there's a lot of national pundits who just kind of assume the Yankees are going to get this one. I mean, Game 1, Tanaka was masterful. 6 scoreless innings, only gave up a hit in what was a 7-0 Yankees victory down in Houston. Zach Greinke wasn't terrible in that game. 6 innings, 3 runs, did give up a couple of homers, but that is a quality start by definition in Major League Baseball. And Zach Greinke, historically over his postseason career, isn't great, but this guy is still a really, really good pitcher.
Yeah.
And this year, 18-5 with a 2.93 ERA. Like, I'm hearing national pundits talk about this dude as if he's just not very good. Like, he's right there with Masahiro Tanaka. He might even be better than Masahiro Tanaka. He had a much better regular season in 2019 than Tanaka did. So I wouldn't count the Astros out of this game at all. And obviously, with the rain delay, the postponement of yesterday's originally scheduled Game 4, you've got Justin Verlander tomorrow. I mean, this series might not make its way back to Houston. There is a legitimate shot of that happening. I wouldn't count Zach Greinke out. I know he hasn't been great in the two postseason starts, like you said, but this guy is still an all-world pitcher, one of the better pitchers of this generation.
He is. The only reason why I would have pause if I'm an Astros fan is because it's starting to feel like Zach Greinke does not handle pressure all that well. And we've seen him in a couple of post-game interviews where he's barely able to get words out of his mouth. And I know that plenty has been focused on, throughout his career, this crippling anxiety that he has dealt with. You just wonder if that's starting to resurface now that he is considered such an integral piece in what people hope in Houston is another World Series championship team. Is that starting to get to him? I think we'll find out more answers about that tonight.
I think it's a good thing there's a little bit less pressure on him since he's the number three starter, right? He doesn't have to go out and be the ace of this Houston Astros ball club. But we'll see, man. I just think this guy is due for a big-time start tonight. And we'll see if the Astros bats can come to life a little bit. You know, we saw some signs from them in Game 3, but we haven't quite seen one of those barrages for the Houston Astros offensively in a while. We'll see if that happens tonight at Yankee Stadium. But I'm telling you, man, I think the postponement of Game 4, moving it tonight instead of last night, I think that really benefits the Houston Astros. I think they've got a golden opportunity to go out and take command of this series, and they might close it out before it even goes back to Minute Maid Park.
No question about that, because you don't have to burn that bullpen game or maybe try and throw somebody in there that you hope can give you three or four innings and then rely on the bullpen the rest of the way. You can go back to the top of the rotation as it was dictated to start this series. Of course, Verlander and Cole needed a couple of extra days rest after they finished off the Tampa Bay Rays in five. So Zach Greinke is the first guy to get the ball in this series. It's back around to him now, and that certainly does benefit the Astros more so than the New York Yankees, who are fine going with the bullpen day. That's what they'd prefer.
Yeah, the Yankees bullpen is great, but because you lose the travel day due to the postponement of the series, I think that also benefits Houston. I mean, we might have four games in four straight days, the last two, obviously, if necessary. But the Yankees, we've seen it in this series from Aaron Boone. He manages an aggressive bullpen, a very aggressive bullpen. I mean, at the first sign of his starter not getting the job done, he won't hesitate. He's going to call somebody out of the pen. And the Yankees have, you know, five really good arms out of the pen. Maybe only four, since Adam Ottavino kind of forgot how to pitch so far in this postseason. The Yankees have some arms, but you can't rely on those guys 4 days in a row, which is going to have to be the case for the New York Yankees because they lose that rain-out travel day. So I think that also benefits the Astros. Yeah, the Yankees have a better bullpen, but their starters aren't good enough to get them into the late innings like the Astros starters are. So the Astros bullpen, by tomorrow, by Saturday, by Sunday, if those last two are necessary, they'll be fresher than what the Yankees are trotting out there.
Yeah, in a perfect world, if you're a Yankees fan, you not only get a decent run from Tanaka today, but tomorrow's starter can also give you five or six innings. That way you can kind of balance out which bullpen pieces you're having to use on each day. But that's also not the reality of postseason baseball. So there's a good chance we see guys pitching three, if not 4 days in a row, if the Yankees are actually able to extend it all the way to seven.
And are you cool with the Astros pitching Justin Verlander tomorrow in Game 5? There's some folks who just want to save him for Game 6 back at Houston. What's your take on that?
If I'm the Astros, or if I'm A.J. Hinch, I should say, I'm saving Justin Verlander until
really?
Game 6. I am.
I'm not messing with his mojo, man. Because if he pitches tomorrow, it'll be on regular rest. I'm not messing with a pitcher's routine.
Okay, my apologies. I thought regular rest was Game 6. If regular rest is tomorrow, then I'm okay with him pitching tomorrow and saving Gerrit Cole for the possibility of Game 6 or Game 7, which is probably what I would roll with Gerrit Cole to make sure that he has his normal rest, too.
Let me make sure I've got this. So he pitched on the 13th. So we need 4 days. So the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th. 17th is today. So yes, it would be normal rest for JV tomorrow.
Yeah, no problem with pitching Justin Verlander tomorrow, especially because even if the Yankees win tonight, you do take a stranglehold on the series if you win one of the next two. You don't need to win both.
Yeah.
Obviously, winning both is a great thing. You close the series out.
Yep.
All you need is one of the next two, though.
Yeah, and you save Gerrit Cole for Game 7, unless you're down 3-2, right? Unless the Yankees take the next two, then in a must-win elimination game, you pitch Gerrit Cole on short rest. But if not, you save him for Game 7. And if you're the Astros, you'd obviously like to close this out before using Gerrit Cole again so he can start Game 1 of the World Series against the Washington Nationals. All right, we've got Tom McKay on the line.
Buddy Tom
wants to talk a little bit of baseball. Tom McKay of Audio Visual Consultations fame. What's going on, Tom?
Hey, guys. Just how y'all doing, first off?
Doing very well. How about you?
Good. Doing well. Doing well. We haven't been able to hear y'all very much lately. Been doing a little busy these last couple weeks. But I wanted to just bring up on the Grinke stage, there's one thing that isn't that you may know, may not. I don't know. Other than his anxiety, which he's just never going to do an interview that's worth a crap, so don't worry about that part. But the right now, what he's still going through, the same thing that Cole and Verlander did when they first got there, going through all the analytics, working on the stuff, they're doing changes on his pitches. He's getting it figured out quite well, it looks like, but he's still leaving some of them out there in the middle, and that's why he's been giving up four or five runs in the last, you know, four starts, really. And it's if Tanaka gets hit like he usually does by the Astros, unlike the last time, in the last three games prior to that, Astros have put up six runs on the dude. He's average. So all they have to do is get their bats going, and Grinke will be fine tonight. I wouldn't be too concerned there. The I did want to bring up, just if you guys got a sec for me here, where I could this weekend out at Cedar Park, got the Stars back in town. We're going to be retiring Travis Morin's number as the greatest star of all time on Saturday night. And would really appreciate if anybody got there and help out with the 50-50 raffle, contribute to the foundation, and just have a great time out there. If you see me, feel free to yell at me. And if you guys can show me that you're trying to help out with the foundation, I'll be happy to help you guys out anytime. Any of the fans out there that are listening to you guys right now and watching the Stars, give you a discount if you keep contributing to the foundation out there in Cedar Park. You don't have to contribute to me, contribute to the foundation.
Tom, you going to be at both the games against Grand Rapids on Friday and Saturday?
I will be center ice, section 107. Anybody wants to holler, holler.
There we go. Rocking the Ref You Suck jersey tomorrow and Saturday.
I will be. 23 will be worn hard this weekend.
There we go. Well, hey, that's awesome. Congrats to Travis Moore. I know he's a good buddy of you, and you're right. The best Texas Stars player of all time. He deserves the honor. Thanks for calling, Tom.
Have a great one.
Right, thanks, Tom.
There goes Tom McKay of AV Consultations. Yeah, get out there. Two home games tomorrow and Saturday. Support the Texas Stars Foundation by buying those 50-50 raffle tickets, and you can win 50% of the jackpot. That's why it's called 50-50, man. It's a beautiful thing. Could be money in your pocket and money going to a great cause to benefit some of the local nonprofit charities around Central Texas. That's a couple of great points that Tom made. You know, the Astros bats have been really good against Masahiro Tanaka during the regular season this year and in previous years. You go back to the ALCS in 2017 as well. So we'll see if their bats can wake up. And Zach Greinke, yeah, his two postseason starts haven't been great. I mean, he got roughed up in Game 3 against the Rays. There's no doubt about that. But three starts ago, he had a no-hitter through 8 1/3 innings. Now, that was against Seattle, and that was a regular season game. But it's not like a very scary downward spiral that Zach Greinke is on. I think this dude's going to have a really, really good day. I don't know if I'm picking the Astros to win this game, but they've got a good shot. I think this will be a pretty good pitcher's duel tonight between Tanaka and Zach Greinke. Game 4, first pitch tonight, a little after 7 o'clock Central Time. All right, Trey, you texted me this morning that you've got some thoughts about the University of Texas Longhorns defensive coordinator Todd Orlando. What's on your mind regarding the $1.7 million man?
It's not just Todd Orlando.
Okay.
The genesis of this opinion has to do a lot with what I've been hearing out of other people over the last few days now. And it has to do with the injury bug striking this football team, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. And while it is certainly a part of what's going on, it would be ignorant to claim otherwise, it feels like injuries are being included as the reason that the defense has struggled so mightily at times this year. And I don't necessarily believe that to be the case. And I don't think that it is fair to give a pass to everything that else that's going on the defensive side of the ball by stating that it's all about the injuries. And yes, there have been plenty of injuries. Caden Stearns, Jalen Green, Josh Thompson, now Jeffrey McCulloch, Juwan Mitchell apparently injured his elbow versus Oklahoma. Chris Brown is going to be out 6 weeks now. Anthony Cook suffered an injury in the OU game, but we didn't hear him on the injury report on Monday, so we're assuming he's going to be good to go for the Kansas Jayhawks.
B.J. Foster, too.
B.J. Foster.
DeMarvion Overshown.
Dealing with injuries. DeMarvion Overshown, a guy who wasn't necessarily getting a ton of playing time to begin with, but he fits into certain packages. But it is only part of the problem. The defensive line has stayed not just relatively healthy, they've stayed healthy. There hasn't been an injury on the defensive line this year of note. And while some of these things were issues before the injuries as well, you have to consider the fact that this was a bad tackling team going back to early this season and even going back to last season when injuries were not striking this defense nearly as much. The three-man front not doing a good job of getting after the quarterback or setting the edge, that is an issue that exists with or without the injuries that we've listed. There have been other questionable schematic decisions, not spying mobile quarterbacks, coverage breakdowns on the back end, which have existed in each and every game this year, even when all the defensive backs were healthy, and allowing the opposition to dictate coverage matchups when you are in man. We saw that several times versus the Sooners this last Saturday, where Joseph Osai is not only 20 yards downfield, he's 20 yards downfield trying to cover CeeDee Lamb.
Right.
That is not a good matchup, regardless of some of the other injuries going on the back end. And while it was discouraging to hear Joseph Osai tell the media yesterday, BK, that too many guys were, in fact, going for kill shots or trying to strip the football as the first one to the ball carrier, and it's discouraging because that's football 101, that's something that should be ingrained long before the seventh grade in this game of the season. It is also a little bit encouraging that the problem is being openly acknowledged now, to where hopefully we do see that first guy wrap up, and maybe it's the second or third guy who is coming in to try and get that hard shot or try and take the football away from the ball carrier.
So where are you at with Todd Orlando? Do you think Longhorn fans are giving him too much of a free pass?
I think he's getting a little bit of a pass right now.
Okay.
And I'm starting to side with Scipio Tex, who has had his reservations with Todd Orlando just in terms of what he is doing to scheme against other offenses in this conference going back to last season. And we can point to his first year in the conference, and he was certainly successful his first year in the conference. He also had a lot of good talent to work with. He had a shutdown corner in Holton Hill for much of that year, and he had guys at each level of the defense who were all conference performers. He had Puna Ford at the front, who was such a disruptive force from that defensive tackle position. Malik Jefferson, Gary Johnson really figured things out at linebacker, and the secondary was doing a fantastic job as well. As the talent, or as the starters have gotten a little bit younger, and as he's had to scheme a little bit more to, I guess, deal with the talent that he is working with on a game-in and game-out basis, it has become a little bit of a weakness for this football team going up against even mildly good offenses that are multidimensional.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, last year, Todd Orlando's defense was pretty good. I mean, there was that stretch with the Oklahoma State game and the West Virginia game back-to-back, which things really fell apart. But for the majority of the year, I thought this defense played pretty well. And look, we shouldn't be too surprised by this, Trey. I'm with you. You know, Todd Orlando does deserve a lot of the blame or a lot of the criticism for what's been happening with his defense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Maybe the fans have been using the injury excuse a little bit too much to try to sway some of the blame away from T.O. But it's only three starters coming back from last year's defense, and Rod Babers talks about it a lot. I mean, you go back, you'd have to go back decades before you can find a defense with as little returning experience as what this Texas defense had to deal with this year. So we knew there were going to be some bumps and some growing pains with this Longhorn defense. I kind of figured things would be a little bit better at this point, but the combination of lack of returning experience and injuries kind of sets you up for a little bit of failure. Now, I'm not taking T.O. off the blame altogether. I think he's got some work to do. I think they should probably simplify this defense. Like, you have to work with what you got. You can't coach a defense like you have 11 returning starters, guys who have been in this program for a long time, who have played a lot of games with you. I think they need to make some things a little bit more basic and choose one base defense versus what we've seen over the first 6 weeks. But it's not a great hand that the Longhorns defensive staff has really been dealt this year.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that. And you and I talked all offseason, BK, about the fact that, yeah, there are a lot of guys to replace on the defense from last year, which wasn't a great unit to begin with. So we did expect there to be some growing pains along the way. But eventually, we all thought that this defense had a higher ceiling versus what we saw at the end of 2018.
Yeah.
Now I'm not so sure that's going to be the case because,
well, we might never know because we might not have a fully 100% defense this year.
Part of it is on injuries, but part of it is on the fact that these coaches have put the players in a position to fail. by not having them understanding proper tackling, by not drilling it into their heads of what needs to happen when you get to the ball carrier, and also by being out-schemed by savvy offensive minds elsewhere in this conference.
There's still six games left. I mean, I don't really disagree with what you're saying. The two great offensive teams and offensive minds that Texas has gone up against this year are LSU and Oklahoma, and Texas defense got worked in both of those games. But there's still six games left in this season to maybe right the ship and get some things turned around.
It is encouraging to hear Osai talk about what does need to change. Here's the problem, though. We're not going to know after this weekend, and likely after next weekend, whether it is something that is going to stick, because the competition is bad to mediocre. TCU probably qualifies as mediocre.
We'll know if Texas loses either one of these two games and struggles defensively, then we'll really know.
That's fair.
But you're right. If Texas wins and takes care of business against KU and then at TCU, two bad offensive teams, you're right. No Longhorn fan is going to be like, oh my God, this defense is figured out. Everything's all good. No problem.
But regardless, BK, it's time to start making these actions habitual for when they do actually matter. Against Baylor.
Yep.
Against Iowa State. And the possibility of a rematch versus Oklahoma. Now is the time to change some of these bad habits into good. Hopefully it can happen in a pretty short turnaround. According to some people that we've spoken with behind the scenes, practices have been intense this week. The coaches have been all over the players demanding that they do their jobs correctly. So if that sticks, great. But if not, this is one of those moments right now where we look back and said, yeah, it was actually pretty obvious after the Oklahoma game that Todd Orlando was in a little bit over his head with this conference.
Midday with Trey and BK. Before we go to break, Trey, I want to ask you this, and I also want to ask the Specs texters. The Specs text line is open, 337-3776. 1 to 10, scale of 1 to 10, what is your concern level with this Texas defense? 1 being they'll be fine, just dealing with injuries, whatever, they're not that bad. 10 being, yeah, I'm really freaked out about the last six games in a potential Big 12 championship game. I'm not sure the missed tackles. I'm not sure the missed assignments, I should say. I'm worried about those not getting fixed at all. 1 to 10, where's your panic level with this Longhorn defense?
Panic level, 10 being the strongest,
right.
You said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Panic level right now is probably at about a 7 or 8.
Really?
Yeah, and here's the problem. Texas is probably going to shut Kansas out this weekend. TCU,
they're not going to shut them
out. A shutout candidate as well. And Kansas may have a better offense than TCU right now, which is a really sad thing to say about both offenses. But we really won't have a better idea until this team faces Kansas State in the second Saturday of November, because Kansas State does bring a little bit more to the table on offense than those other two teams do. But right now, I don't feel good about the prospect of going up against Oklahoma again, because Lincoln Riley and now Alex Grinch have watched enough tape to know what works against the Longhorns. And guess what? If these two teams meet again in a month and a half, they'll have watched the tape between last Saturday and the first weekend of December to see what has changed for the offense and defense. And right now, I don't have faith that the offensive coaches or the defensive coaches on the Longhorn staff are going to out-scheme their counterparts up in Norman.
I'm about a 5
okay.
Right now with this Texas defense moving forward for the rest of the way. And I think if they get some dudes back and just more practice, more time in this system, and Todd Orlando's going to simplify some things, I think they'll be able to figure it out, and I'm glad that they play Kansas and TCU before the second bye to really hopefully get some confidence, some momentum going on that side of the football. Good point, though. The Specs text line is open, 337-3776. It is Midday with Trey and BK. We'll take your thoughts. What's your level of concern on a scale of 1 to 10? We might tweet this out as well with this Texas Longhorn defense. It is Midday with Trey and BK. We've got Where Are We At in Society coming up. Weird bit that a teacher pulled on Columbus/Indigenous Peoples Day. And also, before that, did you hear who Michael Irvin said the Cowboys need to bring in to get back on track? We'll tell you who next.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK with more classic 90s rock, bringing us out of commercial break.
This is a great song.
Yeah.
I would sing it, but I sound terrible right now. I'm not going to do the song.
Do you know the lyrics?
Any more disservice. I think so.
Okay.
Oh, something beautiful. That's all I got.
Man, I wish I was beautiful. The Horn is partnering with Randall's to give you tickets to Texas, Kansas. That game happens this Saturday at DKR. Chad and Kevin are going to be live at Randall's at Breaker and Research today from 3 to 7 for your chance to win. Don't forget, we're actually upgrading two of the four winners to the ultimate VIP fan experience. Details at hornfm.com.
Only two of the four?
Two of the four.
Sorry about that. Other two?
Yeah, the other two get tickets to the game.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you can't complain too much with that. Hey, you've got about half an hour also to vote on our Wednesday midday power rankings. And something is happening right now that has never happened in the history of Wednesday power rankings.
Have you never finished last?
On the award-winning midday with Trey and BK. You and Trey are very close. As of right now, I mean, this is a photo finish. Wags has 36% of the vote. Trey's got 35% of the vote. Mm. This is as close as it's ever been. And for the first time in Power Rankings Wednesday history, barring me tweeting this out on my own profile to garner 100 votes in favor of myself, I'm going to finish dead last, third place in our Power Rankings Wednesday poll results. That has never happened, gentlemen.
Vote for Trey.
So congrats on that. One of you two is going to win and finished in second place.
Let's collude for the
collaboration here. Collaboration.
No. Let's collude.
None of this collusion or collabing.
Collaboration.
Not collaboration. It's collusion when there's evil intentions.
You do them both together.
Okay.
So you've got half an hour to vote. The best power rankings for best musical decades of all time. Kind of a two-horse race at this point, but go do that at the Horn ATX on Twitter. All right, Trey, before we get to where we at in society today, I did tease it right before the break, and to pay up that tease.
Yes.
Dallas Cowboys Hall of Fame wide receiver Michael Irvin appeared on 105.3 The Fan up in Dallas earlier this week, and he was asked about the Cowboys' recent struggles, especially on the offensive side of the football. After that 3-0 red-hot start for the boys, Dallas has lost three in a row and has looked very lethargic at times on offense in the past 3 weeks. Michael Irvin suggested the Dallas Cowboys bring in Antonio Brown to help with the offensive struggles. He said, quote, "Where do we find help? I don't care. I don't care about media relations or a public relations nightmare. Maybe we should just go pick him up for a week or two." End quote. So the Hall of Famer, Michael Irvin, suggesting the Cowboys bring in AB to help with their offense, especially while Amari Cooper is sidelined with that quad injury.
Thoughts, Cowboys fan? Tempting.
Very tempting.
A week or two.
We're talking about Jerry Jones here. Since when is this guy giving a rat's ass about a player's track record?
That's true.
About a player's background. This guy brought in Greg Hardy, for Pete's sake. He won't hesitate to bring in whoever he's got to bring in to help his team be successful.
He hired Barry Switzer as his head football coach.
Barry Switzer as his head football coach. I'm kind of on board with it, man. I mean, it's less of a panic move for the Cowboys for me versus Antonio Brown's a Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver.
And I hear it's your second anniversary wedding. Yeah,
he can make your offense a little bit better. Pair him with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, Randall Cobb, Tavon Austin. We're talking about the best wide receiving core in the league right now, man. Now, do I think the Cowboys are going to do it? No, I don't. And before Antonio Brown went to the Patriots, the Cowboys were not one of the five or six teams that was reportedly interested after he was let go by the Oakland Raiders, so I don't think that's going to change, but hell yeah, I'm not the PR guy for the Cowboys. I don't give a rat's ass about that. Bring him in. Let's try to win. So there you go. Michael Irvin says the Cowboys should consider bringing in Antonio Brown. We'll take your thoughts. The Specs text line 337-3776.
Don't do that, please.
That's a no for you, dog. Randy Jackson.
Even though the Cowboys may be without Amari Cooper this weekend, his status is still up in the air, that's still asking for more problems than it's worth. I mean, the Patriots got rid of this guy.
I think that was a Bob Kraft decision more than a Belichick-Brady decision, though.
What, did Antonio have a clash with him about going to day spas?
I don't know. Just by all hints, by all accounts on Twitter and looking at reports from people who cover the Patriots, it seemed more like a Kraft save face of the organization bit versus Belichick was tired of his crap.
Kraft trying to show that he cares about women now?
Kraft is a good guy, man.
Okay.
Always cares about women. He would never do anything to put women's lives in jeopardy.
Okay.
Always has been a good dude, man. All right, it is midday with Trey and BK. Specs text line 337-3776. Should the Cowboys bring in Antonio Brown? Does Antonio Brown ever play football again? That is a fair question. Maybe the Dallas Renegades are more likely landing spot than the Dallas Cowboys right now. All right, 11:35 on midday with Trey and BK. We've got a bit to get to. It is time for...
Where are we at in society today?
This segment brought to you by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care. Call or text Jake today for a free estimate, 512-653-0687. First-time clients receive 25% off. Visit slplawncare.com for more details.
That's right. Jake and his crew are happy to help you by mowing your lawn, trimming trees and bushes, raking leaves, clearing debris, and more. slplawncare.com. 25% off that first job. BK, Columbus Day is one of those national holidays that has become very polarizing in 2019.
Yes, it has. Not quite sure why.
Maybe because of Les Miles?
Columbus is the reason we're all here, is he not? 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. If he didn't do that, where would we be right now? Doesn't that guy deserve a day?
You could argue that there were others more important than Columbus in terms of the founding of this country. But yes, he was one of the originals who did stumble upon North America.
And he got here before anybody else did.
Ravaged.
He got here first.
The countryside, killing the indigenous peoples and things like that.
Planned it too. Went according to his plan as well, right, guys?
See, I think y'all's history is wrong.
Well, some
we
people
got here first.
Well, some people do love having the day off for Columbus Day.
We don't.
Around here.
Yeah.
Others think it's messed up to honor Columbus, and that includes one Detroit teacher who is a fifth grade teacher at the Columbus Magnet Honors Academy in Detroit.
She works at a school called Columbus?
It's the Clippert Multicultural Magnet Honors Academy. Way too many words there.
That's a lot of words.
Her name is Emma Howland Bolton, and on Monday, which was Columbus Day, she decided to teach the class a history lesson by wearing a t-shirt that read, Columbus was a murderer.
Oh, fifth grade?
Fifth grade.
Yikes.
Alan Bolton says she wore the shirt to spark a discussion on different perspectives, but school administrators were not amused. They asked her to remove the shirt. The Detroit Public
Hey-o.
Schools Communities District
How
says the shirt...
were the fifth grade boys in that class? Shirtless teacher day?
Coming of age.
Hopefully she had to go to the teacher's lounge,
That was like BK seeing Janet Jackson at the halftime of the Super Bowl back in 04. About 10 years old when that happened. That was huge.
Big day in your life, huh?
It's a big moment for these kids, these fifth graders, getting to see that.
Most of us children of the 80s, we had that moment where we discovered the Playboy near the train tracks. Yours was seeing Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl halftime show.
That's when I knew.
Trying to see through the squiggly lines on cable TV.
Yeah,
that's what I knew.
Did you have the Playboy at the train tracks?
Train tracks? What the hell are those?
Come on.
No one uses trains anymore.
Yeah, but, well, people don't really use trains to travel around all that much, but trains are still commonly used, especially
for
15
freight.
Years ago.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to refrain from answering that question because I don't want to get myself or my father in trouble. With my mother.
Oh. Was he into fetish stuff?
No. I'm not saying anything like that. Well, that's weird. I'm going to say no to that just to take care of Papa K there.
The Detroit Public School Community District says the shirt was first noticed because sweatshirts are not a part of the business casual dress code.
They're not allowed to wear sweatshirts?
Not allowed to wear sweatshirts. Then the statement
that's
on...
not why they forced her to change shirts.
Then
what a terrible bit by the school to try to act like that was the reason.
The sweatshirt drew the attention, but it was the statement that was then discussed because it was not submitted as a lesson plan to be pre-approved. And so she was asked to take the shirt off in the teacher's lounge. Fortunately, Howland Bolton did not have to face any discipline for this.
Hey, you can't be walking around an elementary school with a shirt that says somebody is a murderer. Doesn't matter who it is. You just can't have that verbiage on a shirt when there's, kindergartners also walking around that school, right?
It's pretty abrupt. It might fly in high school, maybe even junior high, but not elementary school. Come on.
Is Columbus a murderer?
Yes.
Who'd he kill?
Tons of people.
Killed Native Americans. A lot of Native Americans.
Who were on our land?
Who were on
or
their
his land. His land, because he got there first,
His
right?
land was Spain or Portugal, wasn't it?
Whose account of history is wrong, you or me? I feel good about mine.
I don't
got a degree from the University of Texas. They taught me that.
I don't feel very good about either of our vantage points here.
Sorry, UT History Department. I'm not gonna like that one. So what? So this is so it's called Indigenous Peoples Day. Is that a nationally recognized thing?
That is the alternate way that people refer to Columbus Day, is Indigenous Peoples Day. We didn't even acknowledge it on the show this year. We didn't mention it one time on Monday.
Because we have to work. It's not a holiday for us. It's pretty messed up. The only reason we're here is Christopher Columbus, yet we have to work on that day.
Yeah.
But I guess it was the Monday after the Oklahoma game, which is probably an important day to do sports radio around these parts.
Yes, it was, and also Tom Herman Presser Day, so we really didn't have the time to acknowledge a holiday that has no effect on our well-being.
I wonder what they're teaching in the schools these days, though, if they even call it Columbus Day anymore. They're just trying to not even acknowledge the existence of Christopher Columbus.
Well, this Detroit school didn't have the day off. Some schools had the day off. My kids were off on Monday.
Yeah.
But Detroit,
for Indigenous Peoples Day or for Columbus Day?
For sure.
For
either
sure?
Either of those.
For sure?
You're either of those.
For sure they had the day off?
I either of those. That.
Well, Christopher Columbus, congratulations, murderer. You've got your own holiday. Mm. He's earned it, man. And a teacher, a fifth grade teacher in Detroit, had to remove her sweatshirt that said Columbus was a murderer that she wore to school on Monday. No discipline, you said? She's not getting fired for this?
Thankfully, no.
No long-term punishment
that would have been a little bit overboard. She had to take the shirt off.
I can't wear a shirt that says someone's a murderer at an elementary school, man.
I'm guessing she has a pretty good reputation around the school, because if she was somebody that they just wanted to get rid of, that would have been a good enough reason to do so.
She hot? Okay. That's the last question I needed to ask about this story. Very important for the details that the people know if she's attractive or not, I think. All right, it is Midday with Trey and BK. There's Where Are We At in Society Today. And we've got a special guest coming up next. Patrick Renna, a.k.a. Ham from The Sandlot, the You Play Ball Like a Girl guy, the You're Killing Me Smalls guy, he's going to join the show. There's a cool little reunion coming to Austin regarding the classic The Sandlot. We'll have that conversation next.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Coming up after the top of the hour, we're joined by Ari Temkin of 105.3 The Fan up in Big D to talk about the Cowboys' struggles over the last three games and whether they can get things turned around versus the Eagles this Sunday night. Right now, though, wanted to tell you about a really cool event going on out in Dripping Springs this Sunday. The Alamo Drafthouse Rolling Road Show and Austin Food and Wine Alliance are presenting a cast reunion and outdoor screening of the 1993 film The Sandlot. That's at the Treaty Oak Distilling in Dripping Springs. As an added bonus, the event includes limited edition merchandise and pre-show shenanigans with three guys from the original cast, including a Q&A beforehand. That cast includes Tom Geary and Chauncey Leopardi, the guys who played Smalls and Squints, as well as our next guest, Patrick Renna. He played Ham in the film, and he joins us now on the Vaqueros Hotline. By the way, you can get those tickets for this event at RollingRoadShow.com, including a very limited number of VIP tickets with meet-and-greet access and exclusive autographed keepsakes. Patrick, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing?
Doing well. Have you spent much time in Austin, Patrick?
You know, I actually did a couple years after I filmed Sandlot. I filmed a movie called The Big Green out there. So I was there for a few months, but it's been a while. So I'm looking forward to getting back out there.
So regarding the film The Sandlot, how did you initially get involved with this? And was Ham the role that you did try out for in the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think there really was any other role for me. I pretty much had Ham written all over me, you know? But I went in there, and I was actually the last guy cast in the movie. And I think that the guy who played was actually originally cast as Ham, and then they switched him and had that vacant spot. So I was the last guy, and I went in and met the director, and the next day I was out on the baseball field with the guys, you know, seeing if we got along. And lucky enough for me, I was bigger than all of them, so I made them get along with me, and then I booked the job, you know.
that's great. And you know, it's interesting to see that even 26 years later, Patrick, people still think so fondly of this movie. Why do you think this film has remained so beloved over nearly three decades now?
It's crazy, isn't it? I think what it is number one, it's kind of obviously it's about baseball. So already that's America's pastime. And then number two, I think it's about just friendship and inclusion and kind of probably all the things that parents want their kids to get out and do instead of sitting behind an iPad so much. So I think it's just kind of about all those, you know, sort of cool values that are important, especially in this day and age. And it just sort of resonates with everyone and reminds them of their childhood, you know?
Yeah, so I know you guys were kids, obviously, when you were filming this movie, but did you guys have any idea that you were making something that would turn into as much of a classic as The Sandlot has turned into?
No, I don't think we could have had an idea that it would become what it has. You know, when you're filming a movie, you usually get, you can tell if the movie's good or if everyone's blowing it. So we knew that we weren't blowing it. You know, the producers would come on set the next day and they seemed pretty happy and we're like, all right, this is good. And we were having a good time and cracking each other up. But there's no way anyone who says they knew, they're lying. There's no way to know that it would have done this. And meant, I mean, I've met three generations at the same time, grandfather, father, and his kids. And that's pretty wild.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Speaking with Patrick Renna, a.k.a. Ham from the comedy classic The Sandlot. Patrick, I've got to ask, which of your two, I mean, you have plenty of famous lines in The Sandlot, but which of the two have been more recited to you over the years? Is it "You're killing me, Smalls," or is it "You play ball like a girl"? Which of those two quotes have you been less able to get away from over the last 25 years or so?
Probably "You're killing me, Smalls." I'm sure that's the one that I get the most. "You play ball like a girl," I usually get said to me with a very disapproving look from a mother or a daughter. And I have to spend the next 5 minutes apologizing, saying, you know, I was 13. They paid me to say it. I don't feel this way. You know, I mean, I'm just fearing the day that I ever meet Serena Williams. And she goes, "Oh, really? Really?"
Love that. And while that may be the two scenes that people know you from more than anything else, what is your maybe favorite line or scene from your role as Ham?
I think the one that I like the most is "I'm baking like a toasted cheeser." there's nothing that really quite says it like that. And that was a lot of fun. And people always wonder exactly what the line is. And, you know, is it "cheese it" or... So I had a lot of fun with that one.
Do you remember the first time that you were recognized from the movie? And is that something that still happens on a regular basis here in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of the one cast member that looks pretty similar to how I did then. You know, I mean, he was a scrawny little skinny dude. And now he's a personal trainer and, you know, 220 pounds pure muscle. So a lot of the guys don't look the same. But I sort of, I've kept my nice belly going on, you know. I've treated myself well to the culinary experiences. But so I get recognized. But the first time I got recognized was really funny. I was randomly in a library and the movie hadn't even come out. And the previews were just running. And someone came up and said, "Oh, I just saw you on TV on a preview for the movie. It looks great." And I kind of went, "Oh, wow, this is gonna be a thing here," you know?
Yeah, were you just like the coolest kid in school around your neighborhood once that movie came out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I live in L.A., so there's a lot of actors. And, you know, everyone likes to think they're cool. So I don't know. I think just sort of growing up in this city, I've always had really good friends that I've kept from before the movie, so I've been lucky enough to stay grounded and, you know, not have to deal with that stuff. But in L.A., it's not really anything special, you know, so.
No doubt. Speaking with Patrick Renna, a.k.a. Ham from The Sandlot, don't forget the Ultimate Sandlot Movie Party with the cast live in person coming up this Sunday at Treaty Oak Distilling. You can get your tickets at RollingRoadShow.com. And Patrick, for people who are considering going out there on Sunday, what can they expect? What type of Q&A? What type of stuff is going to be going on outside of the screening of the film on Sunday?
Yeah, well, the three of us, myself, Shanti, and Tom, Squints, and Smalls, we're going to do a Q&A before, and then even before that, I think we're just going to have a good time out, you know, at that location and play some wiffle ball and mess around and say hi to everyone. And should be a good day, you know, a good, fun-filled family day.
Are you to the point now where you kind of tune out of the movie whenever you're attending one of these screenings? I'm imagining that you've seen it 300-plus times by now.
You know, I haven't actually seen it that many times because, to be honest, when the movie starts playing, I probably do something else. But my son just turned 2.5, and he actually watched it for the first time and
got
really into it. So I kind of watched it with him and went, hey, I see what everyone likes about this. This ain't half bad. So
are we going to get a Sandlot 2 with your son, with some of the kids of the original cast?
I think that they are actually talking about a TV show with because, you know, Disney Plus is launching their new, their new streaming platform. So they're sort of talking about doing a TV show with us where our kids are in it, kind of like Cobra Kai, you know, 25 years later. And
I love that.
Nice.
Yeah, it should be fun. And I think there's some fun stuff with the Squints character and my character. So, you know, once it gets going, I kind of like that it's a TV show, too, because to make a movie, it just kind of competes with the original, and I think that's a mistake, you know?
Agreed, and plus the ability to tell a story is much richer with what is going on in the television landscape right now versus trying to jam everything into 90 minutes.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and you can just, it can be one of those, you know, 10, 12 episodes a season and whatever, 30 minutes, an hour, you know, kind of get people loving it.
Now, you said you have a 2.5-year-old son. I have a son who just turned 3, and it's a pretty wild time trying to keep up with him around the house. Did your 2.5-year-old recognize you as someone who was obviously 26 years younger than you are now?
He knows that it's me in the movie when we show it to him. He'll wake up in the morning sometimes and say, I want to watch Dad play baseball.
That's cool.
Watch. But yeah, two and a half, three. It's definitely a wild age right there. I mean, they are just they are ready to go, and they're talking, and it's a whole different world. It's fun, but it's also a lot of work.
Check out The Sandlot this weekend. It's on Sunday through the Alamo Drafthouse Rolling Road Show and Austin Food and Wine Alliance. It actually includes a cast reunion and outdoor screening of the 1993 film The Sandlot at Treaty Oak Distilling in Dripping Springs. You can get your tickets at rollingroadshow.com. The cast includes the guy we've been talking with for the last 10 minutes or so, Patrick Renna. Played Ham in the film, literally has some of the most famous lines from this classic movie. Patrick, thank you so much for the time today, man.
Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You got it.
Good stuff right there, man. That sounds like a pretty cool opportunity. Get to watch The Sandlot, get to maybe play some wiffle ball.
That'd be fun.
With the cast of The Sandlot, with Squints, with Ham. Are you kidding me? That's pretty cool. Coming up on Sunday, rollingroadshow.com. Nice get there, my friend. Patrick Renna, a.k.a. Ham. You play ball like a girl or you're killing me, Smalls? What's your go-to? I feel like I've said you're killing me, Smalls, way more than you play ball like a girl over the years.
So about 10 years ago, I could sense the PC shift in saying that you do something like a girl, like you do some athletic endeavor like a girl. So I changed that one to you play ball like a hipster. So I probably use you're killing me, Smalls, more than you play ball like blank.
You don't want to offend the hipsters now. Especially in this city.
Screw the hipsters.
They'll just go homeless rogue on you. We've seen that very often.
Screw the hipsters, and I say that as somebody who is part hipster.
Interesting. Part hipster. All right, it is midday with Trey and BK. Cool conversation there with Patrick Renna. Check it out, rollingroadshow.com. All right, we missed our normal Tuesday hit with Ari Temkin of the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, so we'll check in with him. What's the level of panic with the Dallas Cowboys and his thoughts on Sunday Night Football, the Cowboys and the Eagles? Can the boys get back on track against one of their biggest rivals? We will ask Ari. And also, Ari Temkin might be one of like 20 people in the world who have watched every Kansas football game this year. He's an alumnus of KU, so we'll get his thoughts on Texas-Kansas as well. Football conversation is next.